Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are for the table. So many times we give and rhyme, cut off by hunting able. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Aryan Roundtable. Today's date is the 19th of December 2016 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. I'm joined today by our regular Radio Aryan co-host Grandpa Lampshade, and we also have a special guest with us. We also have Florin Geyer from Mysterium Fascis. How are you doing today, Grandpa?
Doing great, Sven. Great to be back on the Roundtable.
Good. We're glad to have you back. We haven't had you on here for quite a while, so I'm looking forward to this. How are you doing today, Florin?
I'm doing very excellent. It's an honor to be on. Glory be to God.
Well, it's great to be talking to you again. I'll just remind listeners, we have got an Aryan Insights interview that we did with you, as well as the Mysterium Fascis content, which we also simulcast, I guess you could say, on Mondays. And today we've got three topics we're going to be talking about. We've got Christians and Pagans, which is going to be the topic I'm going to be going into. Florian's going to be looking at a Norway pedogate scandal. And Grandpa is going to be looking at Putin and these latest claims about Putin fiddling the election results. So I guess first off, I'll go into my piece on Christians and Pagans. And this is just something that I've really wanted to sort of get off my chest, because it's something that I see happening quite a lot. And really, I want to be talking about what I believe to be a non-existent distinction that causes a lot of division among us. And I'm talking about pagans and Christians, and particularly allegations that Christians somehow stole traditions from pagans. Now, I think this is disingenuous, because you cannot steal what belongs to you in the first place. Whatever was positive about our earlier beliefs was kept, and whatever was not helpful was discarded. Once influential countries such as France, Germany and Britain had all become Christian, it was no longer profitable to remain pagan, as you had a commonwealth among the Christian countries that you were excluded from. So there were material benefits to becoming Christian, and all it meant was undergoing baptism. Most of the kings of Europe realised this, with the exception of the Baltic countries, where the Teutonic Knights went in to forcibly convert the last of the European tribes. And Charlemagne did put down a small political rebellion that just happened to be made up of pagan chiefs. But the rest of the Christianisation of Europe was fairly peaceful. Before the unification of Christendom, we had the Vikings, who would go out in raiding parties and steal whatever they could find and burn everything down upon leaving. And this caused particular problems in Britain, where the monasteries and libraries had only just started to be rebuilt after the pagan Saxons had burned them all down. And once the Saxons became Christian, peace reigned on the island for a short while until the pagan Vikings arrived. And the Saxons would try to make peace with the Vikings, inviting them to settle and colonise the land, but the Vikings were not interested in this. They just wanted to behave like pirates, until eventually some of them converted and undertook baptism. And the Saxons didn't want to kill them, they just wanted to live in peace with them. If they defeated them in battle, they would offer them the chance to convert and live alongside them, which must have seemed very strange to the Vikings at first. But the Saxons had recognised them as brothers who had just not learned how to properly behave themselves yet. After all, the Saxons had been in the same position just 200 years before. Once the Viking chief accepted baptism, the rest of his men would as well. And King Guthrum, the former Viking pagan, became a just and noble king after realising the benefits that the new faith brought. His line continued in Britain and even went back to Denmark to help convert his Danish brothers. The idea of individual choice in these matters is a modern notion. The nation did whatever the king did. So when King Lucius became Christian in the 2nd century, the whole of Britain became Christian too. This did not mean they stopped doing what they were doing before. The Druids continued to hold their positions in society, they continued to run their universities, and they continued to be judges in the matter of law, because the laws did not change. Essentially, the only difference was that there was now a brotherhood of nations, where there was none before. King Arthur had to return from waging war in Europe in order to put down a rebellion of Scots at one point. And when he had them all at his mercy and could have finished them all off, the Scots reminded him that they were Christian men just like himself. And because of this, he gave them clemency. Now, whether we were pagans or Christians, we were always the same people. What Christianity meant was that we associated ourselves with being a part of Christendom, as well as with our own nations. It was a precursor to how we feel today, where we know that we are a part of the white race, as well as a part of our own respective nations. Back then, the church was all white men, and being a part of it and identifying as that meant that we saw the other white nations as brothers, rather than seeing them as strangers ripe for plunder, as the Saxons and the Vikings had originally seen the British. Rather than destroying the old sacred spaces, the stone circles, the mounds and the wells, the church simply blessed them and continued to use them. There are many stone circles left in Wales that have churches at the centre, as well as on mounds, similar to the one that Jesus gave his famous sermon upon, and also many holy wells dedicated to saints, associated with the ancient pagan guardians of the place. Even the churches themselves are full of carvings and sculptures, showing the former nature deities, ensuring a sense of continuity rather than a break with the past. These images were not stolen by the church or by Christians, because they were our own spirits of nature in the first place. And you would not say the Scots stole from the Picts, or the French stole from the Gauls. So why would we say the church stole from pagans? It really seems nonsensical to me, and just designed to cause animosity between us. And I'll pass that over to you for a comment first, I think, Florian.
I think that's really an excellent little exposition, and I agree with you 100%. And I think that, yeah, you've touched on two things which I think are critical, that we, even those among the traditional circles, have lost understanding of. Individualism has crept into every corner of our society that even those among us who are dedicated to rejecting it and modernism don't really know how our ancestors used to live. But our ancestors used to live in a fashion that anthropologists call didactically, meaning that all interaction happened between two or more people. There was no such thing as the individual, and that nobody existed on their own. They existed as part of a corporate personality, whether it was a family or a tribe or a warrior band or a kingdom. And so what the head of that corporate personality did, well, just as the head of the household does, it flows downwards. And then the second point I wanted to make was that of, you talked about Charlemagne and the political rebellion of the Saxon lords. Exactly. The thing is baptism was always used as a political tool. If you accepted baptism, it meant that you were accepting the reign of the king and his fealty to him, essentially. And so that's why for the Saxon kings, if they did not accept, or Saxon lords, if they did not accept baptism, they were executed, because the baptism was a reaffirmation of their loyalty from a civil perspective, not just religious.
So it wasn't really about trying to get rid of pagan beliefs. It was more a question of people rebelling against Charlemagne, because a lot gets made about this massacre that happened in the forest with these groves. And I suppose it would have been symbolic to level the groves and say, look, I'm the guy that's in charge. You've got to stop with your rebellion, because a lot does get made about this, and it gets exaggerated quite a lot, and I often hear pagans pointing to that and saying, well, you know, you put us all to the sword, what have you, and it just doesn't seem right to me. It was a political thing, and it was beneficial for the people once they did become Christian, because then they were a part of this Commonwealth, and they could trade. And the Viking in Britain, this Viking Guthrum, I mean, he became a really good king, and he fought on the side of King Alfred. And, you know, he must have taken on baptism a couple of times, maybe even taken on baptism a couple of times before that, because they came to a peace a couple of times and offered the conversion to him. And it was only the eventual time that he did actually take this baptism and his men, and he took it seriously. And then he became a just Christian afterwards, and his line continued. And that was when the Vikings finally stayed and settled down. Up to that point, They'd been behaving like pirates. And I think this is, something that people don't realise is that the white nations, you know, we would plunder each other pretty much. We would go into the next country next door and plunder them until we became Christian. And they would take the white women and even sell them to Muslims as slaves. You know, it was that bad. Once they had the idea of Christendom, it was like we have now with the white race. We know that we're separate nations, but we're all a part of this white race. And back then, to be a Christian was the equivalent of being part of the white race. And if you look at the early references, they refer to white people as the Christians, and the British people get referred to as the Christians in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. I think it's an important subject, and it's one that that I think should be used to sort of heal some of these rifts, because especially with Christmas coming up, you hear, oh, well, the Christians stole all the traditions from the pagans for Christmas. Well, there are our traditions. We can't steal them. You know, of course we're going to use them because we want to be reminded of our ancestors, because we honor our ancestors as we're commanded to. But I don't want to take up too much of this with just my own voice. Grandpa, have you got a comment you'd like to make on this?
Well, and I'll be honest, you know, my knowledge in this subject as far as these ancient traditions and stuff is pretty limited. So I'm kind of sitting here getting my education as well as the listeners are. But I think it's highlighted that, you know, like you said, it's not a matter of stealing. It's more of a matter of the culture just kind of morphed and included these things. It's just adapted as the Christianity spread. You know, like you said, these things didn't get torn down and destroyed. They just simply adapted and adopted and morphed everything and combined it in and went on. It reminds me, I was sitting here thinking about it, and it reminds me of a meme I saw here. Oh, it's been some time back, but, you know, where somebody is saying, you know, I follow the Viking gods, you know, I'm follow the Viking gods. And the guy was like, so you want to, you know, burn virgins alive on the funeral pyre? And like, what? No. Why would I do that? You know, a lot of times I think when people talk about, you know, they glorify these old pagan ways or whatnot, you know, they don't really understand what those things actually involved. You know what I'm saying? They don't really understand what all happened. You were talking about where the women would be taken and sold to the Muslims, you know, and people just, they're ignorant of what those ancient ways actually involved. But like I say, I mean, I'm kind of sitting here getting my education on this, so I don't have a whole lot of comment on it, but I do think it is interesting, again, that, like you say, the culture really just adapted and you took these things and morphed them into one thing, and we do our Christian traditions that we have today.
Well, the positive things, I think we kept. Whatever was positive, we weren't going to just throw it away. If it was a useful tradition, then we kept it. And we adapted it, and we see, you know, the Christianization of our old traditions. So especially at this time of year, at Christmas time, a lot of the old traditions that we had have evolved into Christian traditions, and we can see our history by looking back at them. I do think it's a subject that's particularly important around this time of year. I don't know if you've got anything else you'd like to say on that, Florian, before we move on to your Norwegian story?
No, I think it's been fairly excellently stated. The only thing I would want to expand upon a little bit was what I was talking about with the corporate personality and the various inter-European tribal wars. And that's the thing people don't really understand, is before Christianity came along, I mean, the different European peoples were as disparate as African tribes. They did not view each other with a sense of unity beyond what might, you know, language or religious identification, because of the way this corporate and tribal personality worked. These were different people. Your own person was your tribe. And so, yeah, I mean, if you read the chronicles about the Vikings, the Varangians, who went down the rivers in Russia, the Neva, the Volga, the Dnieper, they would go along and they would enslave Christian Slavic women. And when they would get down to the Black Sea, they would sell them to the Muslims. And it was a very common practice.
I think you mentioned there the language that we had, different languages as well. And this was the importance of Latin. Latin was the language that was used, Latin and Greek particularly, were the languages that we used for the early church, and the services would be said in them. So it would be the same things were being said in the different countries in this language, Latin or Greek, and the people would learn that. So it wasn't as if there was a different faith that was being preached in different countries, because you often hear that as well, that it was a different faith that was in Britain to the one that was in Greece to the one that was in Rome. And what it meant by Catholic universal was that it was the same faith in all of these different countries. And heresies such as Gnosticism, they were heresies. They would get put down. So you could hear the same thing being said in the different countries. And I think also with the Bible as well, when they first started translating the Bible, there were a lot of spurious translations. So this was the reason why the church was saying, well, no, we've got to have it in Latin and we've got to keep it, that one Vulgate that we've got. Because when they started bringing out these new Bibles, there were a lot of mistakes in them. So it was sensible when you look at it from that point of view, rather than looking at it, you know, the Catholics wanted to just keep the Bible from the people. It was really motive behind that was wanting to keep it as accurate as possible, I think. But that's wandering off topic a bit, I suppose. OK, well, let's move on to this Norwegian pedo-gate thing that you've got for us. I must admit, I don't know very much about this one, so I'm all ears.
Well, there's a couple of different things I'm going to talk about vis-a-vis this subject, but I'm just going to start out by reading this news article from the Daily Stormer, just to give you guys an overview of what's going on here. Now, this article is from December the 9th, but this story broke earlier, I would say, about the 25th of November, and it was reported that the Norwegian police had been engaging in about a year-long secret investigation entitled Operation Darkroom, where they were working on stinging and bringing to justice a group, a network of pedophiles all throughout Norway, and that they had finally made many arrests, and that it had included politicians, judges, policemen, teachers, elementary school teachers, nurses and doctors, the whole sort of nine yards. So I'm just going to read, and this is from Eric Stryker. This is from Tidenskrav. Police have seized 150 terabytes of data material in the form of photos, movies, and chatting. It is one of the largest seizures in Norwegian history, police revealed at a news conference on Sunday. The material shows abuse of children of all ages, also infants, said Hilde Hakras, who is the head of the police operation Darkroom. She also gave examples of the scope of the abuse. The material includes penetration of toddlers, children being tied up, children who have had sex with animals, and children who have had sex with other children, said Arekras. 20 of the 51 people involved in the cases have also been arrested in the Western Police District. 16 of them were taken into custody, and 6 of them remain in custody. 31 people are from other police districts, and these cases are still under investigation. Police stressed that there was no question of one network, but several. We'll read a little bit further now. One of the accused men had included a pregnant girlfriend and had planned with another to commit offenses against the child when it was born, police said. Some of the accused have also posted abuse directly online and performed atrocities against their own children. The charges currently have a maximum penalty of imprisonment of up to 15 years. On the list of the accused, it is including 2 former or current elected politicians, a teacher, and a lawyer. There is also a police officer who is charged in connection to one of the cases. The case against the policeman comes out of the investigation against one of the accused in Operation Darkroom, said the police attorney Stein Exland in the Southwestern Police District to VG. The investigation against the network has been extensive and ongoing for a long time. After the VG, some of the accused will be produced for remand on Monday. After the VG gets lit, comes information about the accused from the FBI's crackdown conducted last summer on the so-called dark web. The FBI hacked in and took over the site, abuse material, etc., etc., and revealed information that it could identify those who were viewing the page. Now, most of the people who are listening to this probably have already heard of the Pizzagate scandal, and this is something that we covered on my show Mysterium and multiple other outlets, and certainly it's still being covered on Daily Stormer. And the material that's coming out in that scandal is remarkably similar to this one, in terms of the level of involvement and orchestration, the depravity of the deeds, and the international scope of the affairs. The same thing is happening in both of these countries where this is actively being covered up. You can go online and look, and you can see moments where CNN would cover the story on Norway, and then they would scrub it. It's no longer in their databases. So it's clearly an issue that is being actively suppressed by the mainstream media, because it's objective, hard evidence here that ties into Pedogate, which is more circumstantial. And so what I wanted to talk about the story, I wanted to just show and to hammer in the point for our listeners that this is who we're fighting. That the people who control our societies now, the synagogue of Satan and their allies, this is what they do. This is the level of depravity that they are engaged in. Sex with children, raping their own children in a premeditated fashion after they come out of the womb. These people not only want to see you dead and in prison and want to see your culture erased off the face of the earth, they want to take your children from you and turn them into sex slaves. And I want to hammer home that these things, they sound hyperbolic, they sound inflammatory, but these are cold and sober. This is, with no exaggeration, what is occurring. And I wanted to tie this into, kind of a Bible study moment in a sense. And I wanted to talk about, for those of you who are Christians, but not even Christians, but pagans as well, Julius Evola wrote a very excellent book called The Metaphysics of War. And in that book, he details very eloquently that warfare is fundamentally not a physical thing, but a spiritual thing that has a physical manifestation. Now, the St. Paul very famously writes about this in Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 10, where he writes, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand up against the wiles of the devil. For we are not contending against flesh and blood, but against principalities and against powers and against the world rulers of this present darkness, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the equipment of the gospel of peace, besides all these, taking the shield of faith, with which you can quench all the flaming darts of the evil one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, and pray at all times in the Spirit, and with all prayer and supplication, to keep in the end alert with all perseverance, making supplication to all the saints, and also for me, that utterance may be given to me in opening my mouth to boldly proclaim the mystery of the gospel." So I'll say one more comment and then just hand it over to you gentlemen for your input. We are not fighting against flesh and blood. If you don't believe in the devil, know that our enemies do. If you don't believe in the spiritual realm, know that our enemies do. And they have chosen their side. And so we must choose ours. And I want to give all due credit to Grandpa Lampshades, and I thought he had a brilliant insight a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about how our enemies have weaponized religion against us. So will we sit here and not respond with the same tools? If we do not embrace faith, if we do not embrace a transcendental belief system that propels us on to virtuous deeds, even unto death, how can we hope to stand up against our enemies who are more than willing to do this?
I think that's a good point that you make there. We need to have the faith to speak out against this. And what's going on there? I think you've got people that are so evil, they're trying to outdo one another with their evil deeds. It's so evil that they're beyond the comprehension of a normal human being. You just wouldn't think of doing that. And they try to promote it as if it's just a sexual proclivity, or they just like to have sex with something different to what we like to have sex with. And it's not that at all. It's about actual hatred for innocence, hatred for children, and trying to do the worst possible damage and harm that they can possibly think of. And they do this in full knowledge that they're doing it to serve evil and to serve the evil one. And I think that verse that you used there, where it was talking about the heavenly places, about the spiritual wickedness in heavenly places, I think that's like got a double meaning. The heavenly places is the government and the powers and the principalities that we struggle against. It's the establishment and this wickedness, which is there in the establishment. It's the people that we should be able to trust. It's teachers, it's police, it's politicians, it's the people that are the ones that are telling us what our morals should be, and the ones that we should be able to go to when we have bad things happen to us. Can you imagine the people that are going to the police, telling them that there's pedophilia going on, and the actual police themselves is a pedophile and is involved in this? I mean, that is, doubly hurtful to think of, that you've got people that you should be able to trust, people that should be in a position of trust, that have abused that to do these sickening, twisted things. I remember a while back, there was another scandal where they caught 500 paedophiles, I think, around the world through their credit card details. And on that, they had police and teachers. It's always people that are high up in the establishment. It's never working class people or people who haven't got a job. It's always people high up in the establishment. That's the spiritual wickedness in the heavenly places, in this establishment, in the government, in the police, in all these institutions that we just cannot fight against, because they are an institution. If you see what I mean, it's not individuals.
Indeed. And I'm just going to insert a little comment here, because I think that you're exactly on the right point. It's not, St. Paul does not say just heavenly places. He says against the world rulers of this present darkness. Satan is the prince of this world. Christ is the king of heaven. And so, I mean, he says this quite explicitly. These are the men who rule this world.
And that's what they do. And that's how they rule it. And we don't believe that they would be capable of doing such things. Because the problem is that when they then start to investigate everybody, like everyone that goes to pick their children up at school, everyone that goes on a kid's picnic or what have you, that in itself is insulting, because it's as if it's saying, well, we think everybody's guilty of this, if you see what I mean. When they investigate everyone's criminal background for anyone that has anything to do with children, that's their way of dealing with it, which, again, I don't think is quite right, because I don't think you can make out that everybody is a criminal. If you see what I mean, the way that they've dealt with this, I think is wrong. But I'm not sure what the way to deal with it is, unless we try and work out exactly what it is that should tip people off to the fact that somebody is a pedophile. There's got to be something. There's got to be something about their mannerisms, something about the way they look, the way they behave, that would tip people off to it. Rather than investigating everyone and thinking everyone is a criminal, so we've got to do criminal background checks on everyone that has anything to do with children, because in a way, I don't think that's quite right either. But I'll pass that over to Grandpa anyway, see what his comments are on this.
Well, yeah, and this story is so huge, and I remember reading that very article, Florian, that you were quoting from the Daily Stormer, and there's been virtually a complete media blackout on it. I mean, you would think this would be a huge international story being covered, and it's not. And of course, I really believe there's a reason why. Yes, this is definitely related with Pizzagate, and you have to realize that these things are being organized at a very high level. You take this case here, and you know, there's obviously people in positions of power, people in positions of authority that have been implicated in this. And when you look at these things, you have to know that they're organized, they're being operated at an extremely high level. You know, here on the Pizzagate story, we keep hearing about, you know, in the media, every time it's brought up as a fake news, as a conspiracy, as a, and they even go so far as to say a debunked conspiracy. Yet, how can it be debunked when it's never been investigated? There's been no investigation in this. The only investigation that has taken place as far as Pizzagate goes has been from citizens taking it upon themselves to find what information they can find on it and put it out there. The authorities, the government, the police have refused to touch it. Why? Why have they refused to touch it? And yet in the news stories, they tell us, oh, this is debunked. It's a debunked conspiracy. No, it's not. It hasn't been debunked because it hasn't even been investigated. You were talking about how the evidence is circumstantial. People need to understand this. Look, the way real life works is not like your Law and Order programs on TV. The vast majority of your murder cases that are convicted and people are sent to prison is done on circumstantial evidence. You're not going to have a, most times you're not going to have video footage of the perpetrator committing the acts. It doesn't happen. You're not going to catch them in the act. There's most times these cases are brought to trial on what amounts to circumstantial evidence. And we talked about the, we're going to stay on the Pizzagate here, but you know, I was talking about this here a while back. People are like, these people who are trying to protect themselves, they keep trying to say, oh, well, we're just taking, they're so crazy. They think a pedophile ring is being run out of a pizza place in Washington, D.C. Well, let's flip that on its head. You know, if we're the crazy ones, if this isn't taking place, then we have to believe that all these emails from John Podesta are about what? His obsession with Italian food? I think they found a handkerchief. It might have had a map on it that's pizza related. What's that supposed to mean? You know, the real conspiracy here, the real unbelievable, ridiculous narrative being peddled on this is from those who are defending it. We're supposed to suspend all belief and think that what, John Podesta was literally talking about playing dominoes on cheese pizza? Come on, folks. Yes, circumstantial evidence, and it's very damning circumstantial evidence, especially considering that the evidence we have is because it's been gathered by citizens who have gone on the internet, who have dug, who have found research and said, hey, look, all of this makes sense if you put it in this light. Of course, this has to be organized at very high levels. I have no doubt that this pedophile ring that's been uncovered is 100% being run by this at the top by the same people that are very much aware of the Pizzagate, because it's about control. Now, as yes, these people are sick, disgusting, perverted people, but you have to understand that's why they're in power. You know, and we talked about this before, I won't belabor the point, but if you're the Jews, you cannot just have Jews running everything, because then the goys will catch on and be like, well, why are we have all these Jews who are overlords? So you have to have these useful goyim that you put in positions of power. And then the big fault with that is once you give these people positions, authority, and power, what's to keep them from getting ideas of their own and not following your orders anymore? Well, back in the day, if you had a file on, you know, pictures, video, whatnot, of a politician snorting cocaine off a naked hooker, you know, that'd be enough to keep them in line. Unfortunately, sadly, our culture has devolved to the point now that that's not enough. You know, if you've got a politician that has a drug habit, whoop-de-doo. If that comes out, he'll announce he's going to rehab and he'll be celebrated as a hero who overcame his addiction. You know, that's not enough anymore. You have tapes that a politician or a law enforcement official secretly cross-dresses and engages in homosexual behavior. Hell, that's elevated to the most honorable status in our society now. That's not enough to keep them under control. So you have to have stuff that's really damning. And now, here you go. What is that going to be? It is this child sex, and I have no doubt also child murder that is taking place in these rings. You know, and as far as these people individually, and this is a case of when you spiral to the bottom. You know, and people go down this path, and it's like suddenly sex with all these different women isn't enough. Now they have to do sex with guys, then sex with animals, then sex with children. They get away with more and more. They have to keep taking it further and further. You have to realize what a high it is for these people individually. They feel like none of the rules apply to them. None of the rules, none of the laws apply to them. They can literally get away with murder. They laugh because we're over here being drug into court for questioning a historical event or for things we say on the internet. And they can literally rape and murder babies and nothing happens to them. This thing is huge, and I guarantee you it's organized from the top. It's organized in high places. If we actually had a real investigation into it, it would just, the whole world would catch on fire. I believe it is so huge. What we're seeing here is very much just the teeny tiny tip of the iceberg.
I'd like to know how many of them were Freemasons as well from that Norwegian group. You know, they're listing doctors, teachers, lawyers, politicians, they're all these sort of professions where you do have a high proportion of them are Freemasons. And you know that this goes on in the Freemasonic circles. And this is another reason why it gets covered up, because the Freemasons will cover up for other Freemasons. They have to. They take vows to do that. So regardless of what the crime is that the Mason has been involved in, the rest of them will cover up for them. And we know that the part of the black magic rituals that they get involved in as well, that includes the abuse of children and the murder of children. So I'm sure that Freemasonry is linked to this as well. I mean, over here in Britain, we had Jimmy Savile, who raped loads of children. Hundreds of children were abused by him. And yet he was allowed to continue. And he was friends with royalty. And there is no way that he wasn't investigated by the intelligence services to see what he was like before he was allowed any contact with royalty. So the intelligence services had to know what he was doing, and yet he was allowed to continue. I'm sure that the intelligence services are linked in with this as well, Grandpa. When you're saying there about they have a hold over people with the blackmail on the politicians and what have you, I'm sure they have informers that they have a hold over with this same issue, that they allow to just carry on, continue with their crimes because they receive information from them on things. I'm certain that the intelligence services are involved, because the intelligence services grew out of Freemasonry anyway. They're intimately linked, and also the Jews as well, with their network, their banking network that was all across Europe. They were the first spies, the Freemasons and the Jews. And you've got this pedophilia linked in with it as well. So you've got the intelligence services that must know about this and that allow this to go on. I think one of the first things that the National Socialists did when they got to Jersey, to the Jersey Children's Home, was put a stop to all the pedophilia that was going on there. And apparently that was the only time that it was ever stopped in the history of Jersey, is when the National Socialists took over the Channel Islands. Because you hear of it going on in all these children's homes as well, and the politicians will go to the children's homes and they'll take the children out on yachts and with parties with other perverted politicians. Jimmy Savile was involved in this. Some of the, I think it was a famous conservative politician and a Labour politician, Ted Heath was one of them. They're all involved in these children's homes. And again, you've got the most vulnerable children in society that have been taken away from their parents, that have been put in these children's homes where they should be safe. And then in the children's homes, they're then being preyed on by politicians and others, and they're being passed around. We've got investigation exactly. going on. Got an investigation in Britain going on at the moment, Florian, about this. And it's fallen apart four times now. They've had four different people in charge of it. And each time it's completely fallen apart. And they're now thinking, shall we go on with it? This has gone on for 2 years now, and they still haven't had a proper investigation. Because it keeps being sabotaged.
If I can put a little capstone on this, you very providentially mentioned something interesting about Freemasonry. Today on Mysterium Fasces, we're going to have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson on to discuss just this issue. And so, look forward. It's going to be a great episode, I think. And yeah, I brought the story to the table, and I said it at the beginning, and so I'll say it at the end. These are the people we are fighting. Okay. when you enter into this realm, this nationalist realm, national socialism, this struggle that we're in, this is who we're fighting. And this is not going to stop until we achieve complete victory over these people. And so you have to understand that until we win, this will continue.
We are on the side of good. They are on the side of evil. It is good against evil, light against dark. That's the battle that we are involved in. And that's the far end of the evil is what we're talking about there. But the whole of this, the whole of everything that they're about is just different gradations of evil. And everything that the national is about is different gradations of good, because nationalism is based on love your neighbor as you love yourself. And everything else flows on from that with nationalism. Whereas with the globalism, it's the opposite of that. And it's the globalism that facilitates the pedophiles and the Muslim rapists and all the rest of it. Their whole side is just pitch black wickedness. And our side may not be perfect, but we're on the side of good. Anyway, let's move on to Grandpa's presentation for this week then. I believe it's on Putin and all these accusations against him, Grandpa.
Yeah, and I tell you, one final comment on that, it strikes me, they say nothing new under the sun. You know, before the National Socialists came to power in Germany, they said Berlin was a boy bugger's dream. So, I mean, yeah, it's, again, as you pointed out, this is what we're up against. They've been doing this sort of stuff for years, and exactly, we're up against pure evil. Okay, going on to my topic here, of course, we had the ongoing narrative of demonizing Putin now, is just doubling down. And of course, here in America, the Trump election, especially, Trump is, supposedly now Trump, the only reason he got elected was because of Putin and stuff. And before I get off into this, we've got a story here about Hillary whining, essentially, about the Russians are the reason she lost. Now, there's several things, kind of as a background to this, I believe. There's several things at play here with this Putin thing. I mean, for starters, I mean, you have the Jews here that are still really upset over not getting their Syria wish. They wanted Syria toppled, and they haven't gotten that. And now that we're a month out from Trump taking office, they can see this 100% slipping through their hands. I mean, they had their list of countries they wanted knocked off before 9/11, and pure coincidence, after 9/11, the countries that started getting toppled in the Middle East were all the ones they had listed off. Again, pure coincidence, Goyim. and they got to Syria, and they got their little narrative set up, Assad is gassing his people for no apparent reason. It's a human right, so we've got to now invade Syria and topple Syria. And the Russians stepped in. And we kind of all know the story, so I'm just kind of skimming over it. But the Russians stepped in, stopped that from happening, took the chemical weapons story out of play. And ever since then, they've been struggling to get a narrative together that's cohesive enough to get the American people behind the idea of going into Syria. And they haven't been successful. And they've keep trying. They had to shift the narrative to this ISIS. Now we've got to back the good rebels, the good terrorists in Syria, who aren't ISIS. And we're going to go in and fight ISIS, but we're also going to topple the Assad regime. And it's, of course, a completely incoherent message. And then on the other side of this narrative, you have these people, the front men, if you were Obama, Hillary, these people here, who worry constantly about their legacy. Now, they think about what are people going to think about their presidents, and they've been telling us for years now how the Syria situation is this complicated thing, and we have to fight ISIS, but yet we also have to topple the Assad regime. And they can foresee Trump taking office. Look, once Trump takes office, all we have to do to defeat ISIS, once we cut off the weapon shipments and the money to them, they'll be done in a matter of weeks, if not days. And how is this going to look on their legacy if Trump takes office? And they've been telling us for 5 years or whatever it is now that the Syria issue, ISIS in Syria, is this complicated thing, and we have to do all this stuff, and we've been struggling to deal with it, and blah, blah, blah. And now you have someone take office, and instead of demonizing the Russians, who are the only ones in the area besides the Syrians, who are really actively fighting ISIS. Now you have Trump take office, and in 2 weeks, it's done. The problem is fixed. Of course, they're going to be looked at as a bunch of fools, as a bunch of lying idiots that they are. And so I believe we have several different things, several different reasons these different groups are attacking Putin personally and the Russians more general here. And of course, we had Obama come out this week and talk about, you know, it basically is openly threatening the Russians now in retaliation for what is obviously a made-up story about the Russians, about Putin somehow hacking the elections. And then on a final note on that, and then we'll get into the article, because I don't want to get too much on a tangent here, but there's so much in play with this. You know, all these different articles are headlined with things like, you know, the Russians hacking the election, the Russians hacked the election, the Russians hacked this. Look, you have to understand, because we've talked about the vulnerabilities in electronic voting machines for years now. And what people need to understand is these machines, the way that you compromise these machines is they're set up, and the compromising takes place when you set the program up into the machine. So they bring these voting machines in, set them all up, and you hook them up basically, think, to a laptop, just to keep it simple. And you download the program so that it knows when you touch this, this vote goes to this people. And in the early voting especially, all of the every 100% of every voting irregularity that took place in these machines was when people would vote straight Republican ticket, it would switch only the Trump vote to Hillary in every instance. So yes, these machines are vulnerable to being influenced. I don't want to call it hacking because that's not correct. They're vulnerable because you put something in the program to where, say, for every 1,000 people that vote Republican straight ticket, it switches this vote, so it's not too obvious. But these machines are not hooked to the internet. So, and they know this, of course. So when they use headlines like Putin and the Russians hacked the election, they want people to have this vision that the voting machines are somehow hooked to the internet and Russian hackers got in there and changed votes, which is literally impossible. I mean, if you had the most super duper potent virus in the world, Trojan malware, whatnot, and I targeted it at your computer and your computer is not hooked up to the internet, it does me no good to have this super duper virus because it's not hooked up to the internet. So they're trying to create this narrative. They're trying to create one of the things that we have been using, talking about the vulnerability of these electronic voting machines, and they're trying to turn that around and use it in their own favor by implying that somehow the Russians could have hacked into these machines when it's virtually impossible. Now that I got off on that tangent, let's get to the story here. Hillary's blame game, Clinton fingers Russian plot and FBI for her election loss and says President Putin has a personal beef against her. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has told her top supporters that Russian President Vladimir Putin directed interference in the U.S. election out of a personal beef against her in a ploy she said undermines the U.S. democracy. Clinton, who spoke at a party she threw for top donors in New York, stated, as the motive, her own criticism of flawed Russian parliamentary elections that paved the way for Putin's return to power in 2011. Putin publicly blamed me for the outpouring of outrage by his own people, and that is the direct line between what he said back then and what he did in this election. Of course, and we'll stop here for a quick comment, then we'll move on. People are reading this and they're like, what? This is about something she said about Russian parliamentary elections in 2011. And then she talks about the people's outrage when Putin's popularity rating in Russia goes way beyond what Obama could ever have dreamed of. You know, it's just, he's overwhelmingly popular in his country, and they're trying to paint this retarded narrative of the people were outraged at him. It's all, of course, completely made up. Their propaganda is so completely ineffective because it's not based on truth. Also, I find it very highlighting of how these people project. You know, Putin is very much a tactician. He's very much, everybody likens him to a chess player. You know, he makes very unemotional, cold, calculated political moves. The idea that he has some sort of personal beef against Hillary Clinton because she hurt his feels about criticism of a parliamentary election, it's just nonsensical. But of course, that's what she would do. You know, she felt some personal slight from somebody. She would go to some great lengths to try to attack and try to destroy them. Let's go on to the next part here. The New York Times obtained audio of Clinton's remarks at an event that was meant to for financial backers for her $1 billion ultimately unsuccessful campaign. She said Russia hit back at her in an effort to undermine our democracy. A $1 billion campaign. $1 billion for a job that pays $400,000 a year. And we're supposed to believe the system's not corrupted. We're supposed to believe that it's absolutely worth raising and spending $1 billion on a job that pays 400 grand a year. And, oh, but there's no corruption going on here. There's no bribery. There's no pay to play happening here. No. It's just, this is the way the democracy works, you see. No corruption at all. Before I go on running through the rest of this real quick, anything y'all want to add, Sven?
I think she's going senile to think that people will actually believe that. I mean, like you say, I mean, Putin's popularity is overwhelmingly popular. I think it was 80, 85% approval rating. So I don't understand where this outpouring of grief came from. I think she's just making it up. I think she's gone properly senile, and she's just blaming Putin for absolutely everything. There's another news report that I saw yesterday, which is blaming Putin for the Muslim rape gangs and saying that this has all been orchestrated by Putin in Germany to interfere with the election of Merkel. You know, I mean, that's even more ludicrous than saying that he somehow hacked the American election is to claim that all the rape gangs and the refugee rape gangs in Germany are all being orchestrated by him. It is absolutely ludicrous. They keep saying that somehow Putin was hacking the American election, but we've got the British ambassador that has said that it was actually an insider that handed the emails to Julian Assange because he knows the insider. So it was nothing to do with any hacking or anything like that. It was somebody on her team that handed these emails to Julian Assange to expose her. And this is the ex-British ambassador that is saying this. It's just laughable what she's doing. I think it's pretty much, you know, she's just driving the nails into her own coffin, to be honest. That's the way that I see it, because it is just so unbelievable what she's saying. It's just ridiculous. And she's even got Obama onto it now as well, hasn't she? He's saying that the American administration is going to get their own back at a time only known to him. Well, he's only going to be in office for another couple of weeks, so I don't think Trump is going to be playing this game. He doesn't seem to believe a word of it, and I don't think anybody sensible would believe a word of it, because it's just complete mad rubbish. Florian, I don't know if you've got a comment you'd like to make on that.
Oh no, not at all. I'm eager, waiting with bated breath to hear what Grandpa has to say next.
Please continue, Grandpa.
Okay. Well, and yeah, and you're talking about Obama and that angle. And I think a lot of what he's trying to do here is sabotage the relations with Russia to the point where they're so bad by the time Trump takes office that perhaps it will hinder his efforts to normalize relations with Russia. And hopefully he won't be successful. Like I say, there's so many different angles going on with this. Let's go ahead and continue in the story here. Make no mistake, this is Hillary Clinton going on. Make no mistake, as the press is finally catching up to the facts, which we desperately tried to present to them during the last months of the campaign, Clinton said, in just one of her lines that hinted at her deep resentment. She called it an unprecedented Russian plot to swing this election. This, of course, is laughable because during the election, the press worked nonstop as a wing of her campaign. And it was obvious to everybody. It had gotten to the point to where they threw off any mask of not being biased, and they were openly working, promoting her campaign. And now that she lost anyway, she's saying that somehow the press was working against her. She's always the victim. In her remarks, Clinton also called out FBI Director James Comey and points to an analysis by political polling expert Nate Silver that pointed to a drop in her support among late-breaking voters in swing states following the release of a bombshell Comey letter indicating that investigators were resuming the investigation of Clinton's emails. Comey ultimately released another letter 2 days before the election stating that the Bureau hadn't learned anything to change its prior decision, having announced he would not recommend charges against Clinton. Swing state voters made their decision in the final days, breaking against me because the FBI letter from Director Comey. Again, this is utter nonsense. I was reading stuff a month before any of this took place, a month before the election, and well-known pollsters who've been in the business for a long time were saying that the poll numbers very much were resembling the Reagan-Carter race back when Reagan ran against Carter, and it looked close, but they said, look for the late undecideds to break for the incoming, for the non-incumbent here, the non-establishment candidate. They were predicting this. Guys that had been responsible for the polling back in the Clinton-Reagan race saw the same exact patterns emerging that took place then, where at the last minute, the undecided people that were telling the pollsters they were undecided suddenly broke for Reagan. And they were predicting that the last minute votes were going to break for Trump. And indeed, that's what we saw took place. I don't really think that had anything to do with the Comey thing. A lot of these people really already made up their mind. They were just telling the pollsters up to that point that they were still undecided. We'll skip down a little here in the article. This is not just an attack on me and my campaign, although that may have added fuel to it. This is an attack against our country. Now, these people, and this goes to what Obama stuff, it's very much highlights. They are so self-centered. They're so addicted to power that they would literally rather burn the entire world down than let go of their grip on power. And it's a very frightening thing because they do have their hands on the levers of power in so many places. But we have to understand, as we deal with these people, as we struggle against these people, yes, of course, it is hard. You have to realize these people would very much rather burn the world up in a nuclear holocaust than give up power for themselves. Now, to normal people such as ourselves, that seems insane. That is literally what we're dealing with. These people aren't going to let go of power willingly. They're all about the democracy as long as they get the results they want. Well, as soon as the democracy quits serving them, they're willing to throw that out the window. Continuing on, we are well beyond normal political concerns here. This is about the integrity of our democracy and the security of our nation. You see, because Hillary didn't win, it's a very attack on America itself. Her campaign chairman accused child rapist John Podesta. And by the way, I added that. I've decided anytime I mention John Podesta, I'm prefacing that with accused child rapist because it's factually accurate. We are literally, with our Pizzagate investigation, accusing this man of being a child rapist. So he is an accused child rapist. That's a meme, by the way. Everybody's welcome to spread that anywhere they get the chance. So, okay, her campaign chairman, accused child rapist John Podesta, who got hacked, is calling on security agencies to brief members of the Electoral College. Now, here's again the dog whistle, if you were. They used that against Trump, that term against Trump. But they're dog whistling. They want the Electoral College voters to somehow flip their votes from Trump to Hillary and burn down the what's left of the democracy in a last minute effort to somehow steal the election. And again, this highlights the lengths that these people will go to try to cling to power. If they were to do this, the last facade of the system would suddenly blow up overnight. It's almost like people like John Podesta are really worried that if someone like Trump gets into office, they won't be protected any longer, doesn't it? It doesn't just sound like this desperate measures here. This doesn't sound like people who are just worried that they're going to lose their political positions. Not like John Podesta, the accused child rapist, is not going to get offered a cushy job in some university or at some big bank or consulting firm. It's almost like these people are terrified that maybe there might actually be an investigation deep into what they've been up to. Clinton said, "I am in an odd historic position," she said. "Back in 2008, I won slightly more votes than President Obama, but lost the delegates. And now I won 3 million more votes than Donald Trump, but fell short in the Electoral College." Well, Ms. Clinton, did the Russians make you lose to Obama? Or if it was the Russians that somehow cheated you out of the election, then was it the Russians that helped Obama and cheated you out of your primary race against Obama? Well, of course not. Maybe it's the fact that everybody hates you. Here's a news flash for you, Mrs. Clinton. Maybe the American people, even the Democrat people, when you get down to it, really dislike you. Maybe you're really an awful, hated person. That's why, so many of the WikiLeaks stuff that came out were about you cheating Sanders out of his support. I mean, they go on about like this, this Russian business. They try to distract from the meat of what these emails were about, but they want you to forget that the head of the DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a good Jewish girl, was forced to resign her position over the revelations that they were actively cheating the Jew Bernie Sanders because he was gaining too much popularity in the primaries. Any comments before we hit the last leg of this? Because I know I'm going to wind up going a little long here on my segment.
No, I'm okay. Unless Florian's got anything to say before you continue?
No, other than to say this is pretty standard modus operandi for these kikes and irony to the highest degree.
Please continue, Grandpa.
Okay, let me go ahead and try to wrap this up here. Turning back to Putin's return to power after leaving office and becoming prime minister, she called the Russian parliamentary elections, she called them flawed and illegitimate, and that it was embarrassing. At least in those years, we stood up for democracy and human rights. Right. And again, this highlights that the only elections that count are the ones that they like the result of. You know, when the people vote, they talk about the Russians stealing Crimea. They didn't steal Crimea. The Crimeans voted overwhelmingly to join Russia because they didn't want to be ruled over by a hostile Jew-run Ukrainian government. We have to recognize Vladimir Putin himself directed the covert cyber attacks against our electoral systems. And here again, this highlights that they're trying to give people that don't understand how these things work the impression, without out and out saying it, that the Russians hacked the electronic voting machines. So, cyber attacks against our electoral systems, against our democracy, apparently because he has a personal beef against me. Again, it's impossible to hack the voting machines. These emails were either handed over or John, the accused child rapist John Podesta, clicked on a phishing email and they got his information. Someone got his information. And then again, this was all released by WikiLeaks. And by the way, when WikiLeaks was releasing damning information on Bush back in the day, all these liberals were praising WikiLeaks. And isn't it funny now that now we're supposed to suspend belief, forget all that, and believe that WikiLeaks is now an arm of the Kremlin? This is how ridiculous and all over the place their narrative is. She called it part of a long-term strategy to cause us to doubt ourselves and to create the circumstances in which Americans either wittingly or unwittingly will begin to cede their freedom to cede their freedoms to a much more powerful state. Yes, because our freedoms have flourished so much under Obama. Clinton's remarks also make clear her lingering resentment towards the press, who slavishly helped her out during the election, by the way, which reported on Russian hacking, but also delved into internal campaign and Clinton Foundation intrigue after internal emails got posted on WikiLeaks and other sites. Yeah, because, you know, they kept trying to distract everybody with, it doesn't matter what corruption is revealed in these emails. It doesn't matter what kind of cryptic pizza messages are in these emails. You're supposed to just listen to us as we scream and pound the table about the Russians. And we'll wrap up here. Clinton called for an investigation. Clinton called for an investigation modeled on the September 11th commission, saying it would do everything possible to get to the bottom of what happened. I think this is particularly funny because the September 11th, the 9/11 commission was a complete farce. Everybody, no matter where they're at on the political spectrum, agrees on that, from the most far leftist to those of us on the far right. And everybody in between recognizes that the 9/11 commission was a complete whitewash, a complete farce. There were very people that were on the commission that came out later and said that was just, it was a ridiculous show thing that was supposed to put some sort of rest to all these people discussing 9/11. You know, they keep hitting us with all these ridiculous narratives, and they are ridiculous. But part of that is, you know, we were talking about, you know, Putin's responsible for the rape gangs in Germany. Putin's responsible for breakfast. Putin's responsible for Brexit. Putin's responsible for hacking the election. Blah, blah, blah. And they're all individually ridiculous on their own. But I think what they're going for here is just flooding people with so much of this that they're just overwhelmed and their minds just shut off and they throw their hands up and stop trying to understand it at all. And that wraps up the Grandpa Lampshade segment. Back to you, Sven.
Well, I just find it funny that she draws parallels between her losing the election with, you know, with 9/11. With the Twin Towers being blown up with a plane hitting that, she views herself losing the election as a serious terrorist attack on America. You can, right the way through that, she's drawing parallels with this. This is an attack on America. Well, it's not. It's her losing the election, her losing face. That's what it boils down to. Florian, do you want to make a comment on that now?
Oh, I find this very funny, very hilarious. I mean, I don't even know what to say to a certain degree to this, because these antics have gotten to the point where they're so outlandish and far from believable that, you know, I mean, Machiavelli said that the best lies are always wrapped up around a kernel of truth, but I cannot see the fucking kernel of truth as far as it goes in these things. I mean, I just, you know, Anglin put up an article today on Daily Stormer saying, well, you know, what are these kikes aiming for if not to coup? You know, what is the end goal of this, right? Are they going to try to, you know, go to war with Russia? Are they going to try to overturn Trump's election? I mean, I just, you know, what is key bona? Key bona. Because that's the only end that I can see to what these kikes are trying to do. So, I mean, verily, make yourself ready that you're aware and sober and upright in thought.
It's like a pantomime farce, really.
We're not living in the same world that we were living in 3 months ago. We've gone completely off the rails. We're into far uncharted territory. I can't even make any accurate predictions. I have no idea what will even happen between now and Christmas.
It did seem that it changed overnight. It did seem like the world changed overnight, and the zeitgeist moved in our direction. Like a polar shift almost in everything, really, with Donald Trump getting elected. They just so didn't expect that. We expected it. That's why we had all, that's why Red Ice were covering the election night live. That's why everybody was staying up and they had all these guests. We expected it. But they in their ivory towers, they had no idea that things were going to change. But we had faith that things would change, and they did change. And I think a large part of that was our faith that things would get better. Anyway, I think that brings us to the end of the podcast. So I say thank you very much for coming on, Grandpa Lampshade, especially for your last presentation. Thank you very much, Florian Geyer, for coming on with your presentation. I'll remind people to check out Mysterium Fascis and Radio Aryan Roundtable. We'll be back in the new year. Next Monday, you've got SES Britannia. So thank you all very much for listening, listeners, and we wish you a very Merry Christmas.
When that's the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam art. We're knights of the round table, our shows are for the table. So many times we give them rhyme, cut out by hunting able. We're off and mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm.
You're tuned in to Radio 8.